In an interview with Milton Fletcher for a Youngstown State University project, Oral History of the American Indian by Jay Toth at the Youngstown Indian Center on May 1st, 1979 at 10 a.m. Mostly your family background. Start with your parents, your grandparents.
Yeah. Well, my father was a teamster. They hauled logs in the log woods around the reservation in Oklahoma and Louisiana. And this is the way he met my mother, who was a full-blooded Choctaw Indian. Of course, it was a very nomadic life for him. And he took my mother and they traveled around, you know, in the log camps here and there. And while they were traveling around, I was born in DeRidder, Louisiana. And after my birth, it was just a kind of haphazard life of leaving me here and there. And they'd leave me back on a reservation with my people and my uncles and aunts and that. And it was a very poor life. And as I said again, a very nomadic one. Indian people were very poor. The white man during this time didn't have very much, and the Indians didn't have anything. My grandfather and my mother had the biggest influence on my life. My grandfather was a typical Indian woodsman. He taught me how to hunt, how to live in the swamp and the woods. We had sometimes 30 people to feed out of the woods. We'd kill deer and rabbit, whatever we could kill, and just fed the people. And this is the way I grew up. I have never lost my Indianness. I mean, as I said before, my grandfather taught me all the Indian ways of life, and these things have remained with me throughout my life. I went into the Marine Corps, was drafted into the Marine Corps in World War II. I was honorably discharged, and I came up to this area here with a friend of mine that was in the service with me. And I've been here ever since. I got a job, and finally I settled down. I quit drinking. And I have always tried to help my people financially and tried to upgrade the Indian people. In 1957, they started a relocation program in Cleveland, Ohio. And through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they brought people, Indian people from the reservation on a so-called program to where they could better themselves. Instead of this, they put them into the ghettos, and in 30 days they would get them a job, paying $1 an hour. In 30 days they'd say, hey, you're finished, you're on your own. So it left many, many people stranded here. At this time, I got together with two more people. One of them was named Frank Fisher, who was a Miwok Indian. He came in from Sacramento, California on the relocation program, and another person by the name of Paul Mallory, who's a Winnebago Indian, and he was from Wisconsin, or Winnebago, Nebraska. And we formed the first self-help group in the state of Ohio. The name of that group was the American Indian Association. It was formed in 1957. So we started to work trying to help our people and fight the Bureau of Indian Affairs to get more funding so that and keep the people out of the ghetto, move them out in the suburbs where they could have a little better life. But it didn't work out. So it's like anything else, the Bureau of Indian Affairs has started. There was no continuity to their program. And finally, they phased the program out. In the meantime, I got transferred from my job from Cleveland, Ohio to Akron, Ohio. And I had to leave my group. And at this time, Russell Means took over the remnants of my group, and they continued there into what now is known as the Cleveland American Indian Center. I came into Akron, and I formed another group, which is the American Indian Cultural Society. And it was a self-help group, and we tried working with the Cleveland Indian Center and Russell Means group there, and things did not work out exactly. Right. I was involved. Russell got himself involved in the American Indian Movement, and I approved of a lot of the philosophy of AIM, but I certainly there was a lot of it I didn't approve of.
Such as what?
Well, their violence and destruction, condemning white people. When you live in a world like we live, where there's a minority and so few of us, you have to learn to live with a white man. You can't, there's too few to fight him. So I've accepted this, and I believe that we should retain our culture and try to upgrade ourselves in the white world, where we will have education and opportunities here. Russell Means went into Wounded Knee. He came and asked me to show support for him, which I did. My group did show support about halfway through Wounded Knee. He went off on an ego trip. Things were deteriorating for the Indian people there. And I advised Russell Means' group in Cleveland to get out of Wounded Knee because things were deteriorating. I sent the word through Mrs. Ermalee Yellow Eagle. At this time, Russell Means said, well, we're at war with the United States and we want Montana, Nebraska, and so forth. And so I severed all ties with this group as far as the support was concerned. At this point in time, I gathered up 50 people and we took over the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Cleveland, Ohio. In order to try to talk to the congressmen, the state senators, to let our people out of Wounded Knee and go home. This thing is the tragic, it was very tragic. The public sentiment began deteriorating, and it was against American Indians. And right today that we're facing the backlash in Congress and other white people on account of the Wounded Knee affair, it would have been a fine thing, only that it was mishandled. If they would have came out when they should have, when the public sentiment was on our side, then we could have advanced further. Now let me say one more thing about Russell Means. Russ has earned his part in history. I could care less what he does. I certainly admire him. He has done, in one way, the Indian people a lot of good because he has certainly brought out problems by doing what he did that the public was not aware of. He made them stand up and take notice. And so, as far as I'm concerned, Russell Means has earned his place in history for that part. The part that I did not approve of was, like I said before, that when he went off on an ego trip, as like so many people that get power do, then he began hurting the Indian cause, in my opinion. I think that if he had not done this, we would have been much further advanced today than we are. I myself have tried to upgrade myself as an individual because I knew that people were looking at me, judging me, and they were judging other Indian people by my actions throughout my later life.
What do you feel, was there anything really accomplished there from Wounded Knee?
Oh, certainly there's a lot, as I said before, accomplished that Russell Means is what they did do. They made the public aware that there was a real need to solve Indian problems. There was a real need, and of course the white people, as long as no one rocks the boat, they have a tendency to sit back and be complacent and let things go, and it's all mouth and all words. They just give you a bunch of words and let things slide along, but they don't take any action until something happens, and in this case it happened. I think certainly it did a lot of good.
Dennis Banks had a...
Dennis Banks, he was one of the secondary, I would say, leaders in the group. Russell Means was the leader. Russell Means was a man that Indian people followed. All tribes followed this man. Had he have conducted himself in the right manner, he would have been the one to keep all Indian nations together where they could work together, and they would have really worked things out here.
You feel there's anyone at this present time that has those capabilities?
I do not feel that anyone at this time has the capabilities that he had. Russell Means certainly don't have the capabilities at this time that he had then, because the people have actually, in a large part, turned against him for the way he's conducted his life. Of course, like I said before, you can't condemn everything. You can't hold everything against everyone. And of course, that Russ, you have to take and realize that he's took a lot of abuse on account of it too. And there again, I say that he inflicted a lot of things on the Indian people and himself, that there just wasn't any need for it, really.
There's a lot of anti-Indian bills pending in Congress. Just as we brought up the longest walk last year. How do you feel that, what type of leadership is going to be involved to defeat?
I don't think at this time, I think that we have, the leadership that we have in the American Indians today lays within the Indian population itself towards doing things legally. No longer are we living in the days that you can go and manhandle and tear up things and like that. These things were in their point in time all right, but I mean today that we have to go through the courts to do these things, I think the problems that will be solved, our leadership is not in one person right at this time. It's a collective thing through all Indian people that are educated, their attorneys and things like this, to handle these people that are sympathetic to the Indian cause, to help us through the courts. For example, we have a law firm here in Youngstown that they have never tried an Indian case or helped an Indian cause out in any way, but they offered their services to this group, the Miami Tribal Council here, to direct their legal activities through the federal government. They offer these services free. So that's a good indication right there that we have to do things properly or we're not going to get anywhere. Things will keep deteriorating. The reason there's a belligerency in Congress today is on account of the backlash of the Wounded Knee thing. And through AIM, tearing up Washington, we still get a backlash from that when they tore up the place. They went in and it was a very destructive thing. It was unneeded, uncalled for. The paintings that were artifacts that were irreplaceable, they're destroyed. There was no need for that. And these things have turned the people against the American Indians' cause. Now, this goes without saying that they're not turned against the American Indians.
Mm. Okay, you said you're placing a lot of emphasis on education. What was your education like when you were in school?
Well, I only went to the fifth grade in Indian school. And if you went to the sixth grade and could speak Choctaw, you could teach school. I was, as I said before, I was drafted or inducted into the Marine Corps. And when I got out, I came up here with a friend of mine. And I think at this point in time that after associating with he and his family, that there was a turning point in my life. And I attended John Hayes High School to finish my education. I took a GED test from Dr. Peter Hampton in Akron, which I passed with a high score. And this was based on a formal education, which I never had. And I've always been very proud of that part. So this is my background. Now, as I said before, that I was toured for many years for Pacific Intermountain Express and for Allstate Freightline. At the people, the drivers there elected me to this position, being a steward. And as time went along, and I got myself elected into the Teamsters Local 24 as a business manager. I have continually tried to bring myself up so that people would say there is one Indian that is really trying. You know, as I said before, the direction that they look in me, they see all Indians. after you've been in public life for a while. So a person in my position, then he actually is more cautious, you know, and if he wants to help his people in his how he conducts his life. And this is what I'm saying, Russell Means should have done that.
Mm-hmm. What I would like to know is, during your education at the Indian school, what was a typical day at the Indian school? What was it like?
Well, in the school that I went to, that they handled all the classes in one room, and it was just a matter of the teacher laying out each one's work for them, really. I mean, it was a...
Well, how many students were there then?
Oh, I suppose in this little school that I went to, there's about 40.
Was the teacher white, or...?
Teacher was white.
Spoke English?
Spoke English. And Choctaw, too. Back those days, they didn't have too many Indian teachers. They were all white people.
Mm. You said, were you forced into...
Let me put an emphasis on this. They didn't teach Choctaw, but they had to be able to speak the language in order to get to the students to teach them English.
Where was the school located? What reservation?
Well, it was in Hugo, Oklahoma, around where I went to attend the school.
It seems to be made an influence on your
life. Now, this goes without saying. I attended school also in public schools in other areas, but I came back to that.
And what was your experience in public schools?
Very bad. I was the only Indian there, and I was sort of foreign looking, as you can look at me now. I was even darker when I was young. And of course, that Mexican and Indians and black people were not really welcomed any place that you went. However, I did attend the white school, but it was certainly a lot of abuse.
Such as what?
Involved. Well, such as Pele Mexican or Indian or, you know, the children can be real cruel when they want to. I went through that. However, I must say this, that many times that I've had my teachers in the public school to scold the students for doing such things, but they did it anyhow. The scars still remain, you know, I mean.
What about your experience in the service?
Well, I was never a real hero, if that's what you... I always tried to look after myself. As you can see, I came back in all in one piece, and I was honorably discharged from the service. So it's something that I'm very proud of, but I wouldn't want to do over again. Let's put it like that.
What do you see in the future for Indian people?
Indian people, I see a long, hard road ahead. I'm inclined to believe that the American people, the politicians, their self, I say this with all reluctance, that I'm firmly convinced that they want to genocide the Indian people. They've been trying it for hundreds of years, and it's coming to pass because you can see I'm mixed. All the Indian people that you see is mixed. They're getting more mixed. And what the government wants to do and what congressmen keep trying to do is to pass laws to actually just genocide the people, put them out and say, you're nothing. You know, in other words, you can't, if they do this, if you get mixed up so much, you can't claim you're black, or you can't, I mean, like the black people, they can keep being black, but Indians, they can't be an Indian unless they retain their cultures and things like this, you see. And this is what your big problem is right now, that it seems to be that the government or the politicians, and I'm not sure what, that they seem to want to sweep the problems under the rug. They don't want to realize that you have problems with Indian people. I'll give you an example. When on fundraising for legitimate groups, Indian people need help. You do have phony groups, a lot of them, getting a hold of federal funding. I could personally name you things and organizations that are actually phony. There's no, I mean, people that gets a hold of an Indian organization more Indian than anything, just to get the control of the funds. But they, when you start trying to raise money, I'll give you an example. We had a disaster out on the Navajo reservation one time. I got a call in to our group in Akron asking, could we help? I got out on my bended knee practically and begged for 50 cents. People just didn't want to turn. We have missionaries out there. I'd go to church group. We have missionaries.
How do you feel the church groups there?
I don't like missionaries, very honestly with you. I think missionaries would be, when a missionary is a forerunner of disaster to Indian people or to any native group.
The American Indian culture is basically a very religious type of culture.
That's correct. And see what the government, they know this. And if we all get assimilated out here completely, this has destroyed your Indianness right there. There's no more Indians. Then you just keep going and get more mixed and mixed and mixed, and there's nothing left. And I think, in effect, this is what they're fighting. They just say, we don't want no more Indians. I think that they realize that as long as an Indian is here, he's going to keep fighting. Indian people have never been conquered, and they won't be conquered. I'm a mixed Indian, but I still fight. I'll fight for the rest of my people, and I hope that I live long enough to see some fruitful accomplishments from this fight, which I doubt very seriously.
So you're saying that the Indian is more of a cultural than biological?
That's correct. Their entire life is based on getting along with nature, living in harmony with nature. The things that the earth, living in harmony with the earth and the things in the earth, keeping things on an even keel, and their religious structures in this area. They just seem to, people want to destroy this, and why, that I'll never know, because I think it's the most beautiful thing to live in this manner. But instead of this, I think the white people are bent on destroying the earth. It's a destructive thing. I'm a few years on myself, but when I was a child, that myself, I could lay down in the woods at a spring and drink. I could go to the Mississippi River and take a drink of water right out of the Mississippi. Any river, you could swim or drink, the water was clear and pure. It's just when I look what they've done to the earth in my day and time, and they're bent on destroying this place. Your earth is like a honeycomb. When you take all the honey out of the comb, then you've got nothing left. And this is what's happening now. They're destroying. They've been on destruction. Your scientists are working against nature itself. My opinion that we were put here, that there was a balance on earth, that the great master intended it. There's so many be born, so many die. The strongest survive, and the weakest die off. This was the balance of nature that we had. And scientists are bent on turning this thing around. They want you to outlive your usefulness. They want, keep you living here. And then naturally, the more people that live, now this seems hard to say, but I'm going to say it, that the more of the things that you, lifeline things that you use up on the earth. And in addition to this, the coal mining industry, they're just raping the land, the oil industry. I think that all these things are put here on this earth for all people. And this includes the Indian people that were here to use. Instead of this, you have corporates that got, and this might sound to you like a fascist or communist, which I'm not. I deplore these groups. But I think that these lifeline things are put here for all people, and there should no corporation get where they can strangle you and strangle the little man by putting the price of these things up out of your reach. Only the rich can afford them.
That's a very Indian part in which all things are communicable.
Right. Sure. This is correct. And the corporations, they've got these large corporations. Our politicians could care less, like for gasoline. They could care less if it went up to $10 a gallon, 20, because the public is paying for their transportation, and they could care less. So they sit up there and pass laws. They let the oil corporations get away with keeping these things, and it just isn't right. the people, the poor people here on this earth, they just don't have a fair shake. That's my opinion.
As I was speaking before about the religious part of the American Indian, which makes up its basic foundation, how do you feel that as far as the influence of Christianity on you?
I think that, this is my opinion, that, of course, that I'm not going to dispute the white man's Bible. I'm not going to dispute it all. The Indian people, they know that there's one supreme being. The people that I know, their religion teaches that it has to be a supreme being. And if you just watch the flowers and the trees and the animals around you, you would know this yourself. You wouldn't have to have a Bible to teach you this. All the other fundamental parts of the Bible, I know very little of them because I was raised in a different manner. You know, I mean, I was, as I said, I was raised to with nature itself. And I knew that there was a supreme being. I'll give you an example of something maybe you won't like to hear this, that there was a young minister went out on a reservation out in New Mexico. And a friend of mine, he came back to Cleveland, and a friend of mine said, Fletcher, said, there's a young minister out here at Wycliffe. He just came back to the reservation. He spent 2 whole years out there. And I'd like for you to meet him. So with this, we went over to his house to have coffee and that. We began talking, you know, and he was talking about the evil that was going on out there. And I said, there's evil. And he said, yes, he said, there's evil. I said, well, give me an example. He said, well, the rain dance, you know, for example, it's the workings of the devil. And I said, well, there was a picture up there of the supposed Christ. I said, who's that picture? He said, that's, are you crazy or something? I said, that's the Almighty. I said, no. I said, I don't know it. Did you ever see him? He said, well, you don't even talk with sense, Fletcher. He said, everybody knows that. I said, no, I don't know it because I never have seen him. And I doubt if you have. And that's the same way that the Indian people do. That when they have these dances or that, they look at the sun or the moon. It's just as an object like that picture. They know there's a supreme being up there that controls it. And I said, they use this like you would that picture. But I said, you couldn't prove that that picture was Christ by me. So this gives you an example of their religion, that they use objective things of nature to pray, you might say, through to the supreme being.
You mentioned one time that you hope to bring the Indians back that is lost from leaving the reservation. And this center is one of those.
I think that we've gone a long way towards this. I think that you sit here in this chair yourself, and you've seen this organization open up here in Youngstown. You've seen the membership expand. You know what happened with the Miami Indians. We have those Indians organized. They have their own tribal council, their chief now. We're in the process of Washington, D.C., of getting them recognized. The governor, we have had correspondence from the governor's office in the state of Ohio. And we're pretty well assured of getting recognition from them. Along this, we're working with the Miami Indians in Indiana. Now there's over 3,000 of them there. So we are trying, and I think that you can see that this is a very fruitful Indian center here, that we're trying to bring all Indian people together in unity. The Miamis is just the start. As you know, here in this organization, we have all different tribes. Now, we have some people here that certainly that I would cast a jaundiced eye as being an Indian, because but you know yourself that we have many Indians involved in the Indian Center. You could not deny that.
Okay. I wish you luck. Thank you.
Thank you.